Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK Show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me, Mike Dilk, on the Relax Back UK Show. For the first topic this week, I chat with Dr. Claire Bailey-Mosley, widow of Dr. Michael Mosley, about the Fast 800 diet that he developed.
Low calories and cut down carbohydrates. And just by changing their diet, they managed to lose 10 kilos over 8 weeks.
Then from something that can help you lose a lot of weight to something that probably doesn't.
There's lots of different ways that one can unwind. And a bit of research that was commissioned by Cunard involved taking people on the Queen Mary 2 on a 5-day voyage from Southampton to New York City. And they did a bunch of testing, cognitive testing, relaxation measures, and they found some quite remarkable results.
However, a cruise might help you relax. I chat with neuroscientist Dr. Jack Lewis. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Before asking Dr. Claire Mosley and other guests Sue and Nigel about the Fast 800 diet, I first mentioned to her how I remember her late husband, Dr. Michael Mosley.
I have to say, I remember him every day, twice a day, when I brush my teeth, standing on one leg, and sometimes with my eyes shut. I really do think it's helped my balance significantly.
That's amazing. That's quite impressive to have been doing it so consistently. It does help people retain that strength.
Yeah, it does. And of all the things I try and do consistently, it's about the only one that I've managed to keep doing. I don't know why, but it's just kind of stuck with me, that habit. So I will continue with that. But anyway, the topic today is not just one thing and standing on one leg when you're brushing your teeth, that's and all those other things. It's diet and intermittent fasting and the Fast 800 diet. But I think probably some good questions to ask first of all will be to you, I think, Claire, just how many of us are overweight? How big a problem is it? And as a result, partially have been overweight, how many of us suffer from diabetes?
Well, the statistics on being overweight are just huge, and growing fast, which is incredibly depressing in terms of, and that has led to this massive rise of type 2 diabetes. So there are 4 million people living with diabetes in the UK. But a million of them don't know they have it. So they're not able to benefit from, improving their blood sugars and changing their lifestyle.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a big percentage, 4 million out of what's the population, 70 million or something? Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of people. What you will meet someone today if you're out and about who has diabetes, almost definitely.
Yes, absolutely. And Michael was one of those people back in 2012, I think it was, And he was one of the first, one of the, you know, early people to actually, we were really surprised when we realized that he had got diabetes, because he wasn't particularly overweight. It wasn't obvious in that sense, but his blood sugars had crept up over the years. So when his doctor said he'd got type 2 diabetes, he decided not to go straight on the medication, which is what most people were expected to do. And most people who start medication stay on medication.
And so this medication is expensive as well. I mean, so let's just go back to the NHS and how many people and the sheer cost of diabetes to the NHS. Do you have any statistics for that?
Well, some, you know, metformin, some of the drugs are kind of cheap and cheap as chips. But a lot of the medications, as you say, are hugely expensive. And we've, you know, obviously we've got the weight loss medications, which are going to be another, have a massive effect. They work in many, you know, they are a game changer.
That's going to be a whole new program or series on the Relax Back UK show in itself, I think.
Entirely. So when going back to Michael, he decided to do it through intermittent fasting. And he coined the 5-2 diet, which is where you eat normally 5 days a week, and you cut your calories down to around 800 plus calories on the fasting day. So it's not actually, it sounds draconian, but it's not actually fasting, because you are able to, it's enough to make a significant change and help weight loss. Right. And for him, it worked really well, and it became, you know, it became very well known as an approach.
Yeah. So, but you know, he did it. That's an N of one. That's not very scientific. You've done a study called the Diamond Study to look into this a little bit more. So, can you maybe outline that a little bit to us?
So that I did the study with Professor Susan Jebb from Oxford University, and that was a small trial looking at type 2 diabetics who were on medication, and what they did is they essentially did low calories and cut down carbohydrates, and just by changing their diet they managed to lose 10 kilos over 8 weeks. And this was a small study, and the control, so it was a really impressive small study. And it also, during that time, they also got their blood sugars right down. And so there's now a huge, they're going to now look at doing a much bigger trial.
I definitely want to come back and ask you about some of the results, but maybe at this point we could bring in Sue and Nigel, because cutting down to 800 or 1,000 calories for 8 weeks sounds quite a task to me. Have you two guys done this? Were you guys actually on the Diamond Study, or have you done it outside from that?
No, we started it 2020. Nigel went to see the doctor, and we'd both been struggling with weight over the years. And she said, oh, you need to lose some weight. Have you heard of the Fast 800? It was called something slightly differently than the blood sugar diet. We bought the book and we started it January 2020. And we've always tried diets over the years, low calorie, low this, low that. And we were absolutely amazed at how it worked, because it flips your normal understanding of how to lose weight on its head.
Yeah.
Normally people say, oh, you can't eat fat, fat's bad. If you eat the right sorts of fats,
So you weren't permanently hungry for eight weeks. Because fat
stops you feeling hungry. All those low fat, watery things that you normally eat on your
conventional. And you didn't feel faint. Did you carry on life as normal?
Yeah. And 2020 kicked in, as we remember, with the pandemic. We were out walking. It was just, we thought the scales were broken, to be honest. We just could not believe it. And 800 calories a day is still three sensible meals. And no, it absolutely blew our minds how incredible.
And did you do it because you were suffering from diabetes or just because you felt you were overweight and had to do something about it?
Yeah, I hadn't ever been diagnosed with diabetes. It was really more a sort of weight problem, and as I said, I mean, I hit 19 and a half stone, and my doctor said, basically, Nigel, you're 62, and if you don't do something about it now, you never will, and it'll cut your life short. And I went away from that. Oh, and then she said, try this diet. Have you ever heard of Michael Mosley? Never heard of him. Went home straight onto Amazon, bought the book, read it all over Christmas, and decided 1st of January, we'll give it a go.
All right. So it worked for you guys and you felt much better. Maybe the thing to do now is bring Claire back in and home in on some of the kind of medical things it can do for people other than just making them feel better and put a smile on their face. You mentioned the kind of the weight loss, Claire. What were the results for that? You gave a figure. I can't remember what it was.
Whoa, sorry, I'm just tipping something over. So for the Fast 800, we had a very impressive set of results, which were quite similar to those that we found on with Susan Jebb's program, but this was an online, using it as an online program. And so those people who were overweight, they managed to lose 7.3 kilos on the program over 3 months.
Okay. So that's about a stone, isn't it?
Yes, it's pretty much. And
how much I should lose, actually. I'm a good stone overweight. Maybe I should get involved.
Yeah,
absolutely.
and it's very achievable. Doing it through the program meant that you had all that extra support. There's a community where they can chat with people and get advice, but also fantastic recipes which are high in protein. And one of the big elements that helps people manage the weight loss is that protein leaves you feeling satiated, and you need protein. Your body, unlike fat and carbohydrates, you don't store protein, so it's really important for your body anyway, but it also helps you feel full. And then that's one of the kind of problems that you were talking about in the past, where the food was not satisfying and people were dieting while trying, struggling because the food wasn't satiating. It wasn't giving them the nutrition that they needed.
Okay. So apart from that, let's go back to the Diamond study where diabetic people were on the program. How did they fare? Were there any cases where the diabetes was reversed?
Yes, so the figures for being mainly it was the weight loss, and they also, their blood sugars came right down. So, and I think it was around half of them managed to get their bloods back into the non-diabetic.
Okay. So they could stop taking drugs for diabetes.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's quite a major hurdle.
It's a huge hurdle. And the impact of it is enormous. That now that we are very much looking at expecting remission, people lose the weight, they lose the fat around their pancreas and their liver, they can abandon the medication, but obviously with the support of their doctor.
Well, I was going to say, so this is based on a study, was actually the Diamond study. So presumably this was published in peer-reviewed journals, etc.
It was actually it was one of the top most cited papers at the time,
Oh, really?
which
Fantastic. All
was
right.
amazing. And it's a very and it was what was also impressive about it was doing it was using real food, which and good quality, food that we would use on the Fast 800 program, that style of
So
eating.
the sort of thing people could do at home
Yes.
without huge amounts of outside help.
And
However,
supported also by just the local nurses within the surgery. So it was very accessible as well.
so it's doable. But the fact is, actually, this study was only 33 people, and 22 of them went through the process, and half was it half of them managed to reverse the diabetes. So the numbers are relatively small. Is this enough to say, right, everybody, let's go ahead and do it? We could reverse everybody's or a lot of people's diabetes, because is it enough information or enough data for all of us to have a go?
Well, that is one of the elements that will send us in that direction, I think. But there is a big study following that program that hasn't come out yet. But Professor Roy Taylor is the person who's absolutely been demonstrating that if you using 800 calories, you can reverse, you can put your diabetes into remission.
Oh, so the work's been done, has it? It's just not published yet.
Well, no, it's now being spread out across parts of the UK as a trial, which has been running for 5 years, and that has had incredible
Oh,
response.
fantastic. Oh, okay, I didn't
And
realize.
that's
I shall
doing.
have to get Roy Taylor
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
on.
He's absolutely brilliant. He's the person who's he's really driving it. And they do it because it's an academic trial. They use shakes with protein and vegetables
Okay, all right,
to
so it's slightly different.
change their diet and get them back to normal weight.
Let me just bring in the other two and ask about long term, because okay, so you had a very successful 8 weeks, shed a load of weight, felt great. Is it creeping back on? Do you have to keep to this 800 to 1,000 calories every
Yes,
day
no,
the rest of your
you
life?
don't. You go on to what's called a maintenance plan, so you can up the calories, but it's the principles of what we eat and don't eat. So we don't eat a high carb diet. We never have potatoes, rice, or pasta with a main meal because we have the protein and we have the things like roasted vegetables. There are lots of replacements for those normal carbohydrates. We love cauliflower rice, which we make ourselves, fried with onions and herbs. And we sometimes sit there and think, oh gosh, we used to sit here with a huge jacket potato, and we don't do that anymore. But
Do
it
you have like
doesn't.
a yearning? Do you sometimes just want a bag of chips?
We have our Christmas can, we go out for the odd meal and things. It doesn't restrict you, and you don't feel like you've fallen off the wagon because you've gone out and had a steak and a few chips. It doesn't matter. You can the whole principle of our way, it's a way of life, really. And
And if when we go on holiday, won't say we're angels. We do have the odd bit of cake, ice cream, those sort of things, and we do put on weight. That's the most amazing thing. We can actually see it happen when we fall off the wagon and we do eat these things. But as soon as we sort of look at each other in the eye and we say, right, that's it, we're back on it
Back
now.
on.
And just suddenly, bit by bit, pound by pound, it just sort of filters away, and we get ourselves back to normal.
So you found you've been able to kind of continue life. That well, that's very impressive. Well done.
5 years now, 5 years. So,
Okay, good, good. I think at this point, because I spoke a little bit to Claire about the massive amount of money that potentially could be saved by the NHS. It's not just the money though. I mean, there's a potentially a massive amount of misery that can be saved from people that have diabetes. So perhaps it's worth going back to Claire and asking, just how horrible it is having diabetes, and what are some of the things that people have to put up with?
I mean, diabetes is an insidious. It used to be seen as irreversible, and now it isn't, which is the really encouraging side of it. But it's part of a sort of metabolic condition where it leads to. It's associated with high blood pressure, shorter lifestyle, so life. Time, heart disease, it damages your liver, and it's.
I mean, you hear of people having to have amputations and all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. It is a nasty condition, and if we catch it in good time, it can be put into remission. And really, we should be focusing, you know, really. Putting a lot more emphasis into encouraging people to go for programs that do help, you know, significantly bring sugars right down, losing the weight, and in doing that, they can have huge, huge benefits in terms of health.
And are these programs? Is the thought that something like the Fast 800 is going to be available on the NHS after this large kind of, well, the work has been done at the minute to kind of prove completely once and for all that it's worth doing and it works. So is it likely that something like the Fast 800 will be available on the NHS? Or is it now?
It isn't now. It isn't now. We are in sort of some discussions about going in that direction because... and there are programs that are doing similar sorts of things, but it's been very slow making that change. People are very, you know, very conservative, and in the, you know, it's not long since rapid weight loss was claimed to be dangerous, and we know that is not the case, and we know that people who lose weight rapidly are more likely to keep the weight off. So there's so many myths and there's a lot of confusion at the moment in terms of finding the right program. I don't know if Nigel agrees. Yes.
I think with, you know, there's a weight loss and weight loss, isn't there? The weight loss that this program is targeting is fat, internal fat, and obviously, you know, external fat as well. Some of the other diets, the fads, you know, the low fat this, the low fat that, you know, they end up is, because you're taking on extra sugar, is they target muscle. And obviously muscle, you know, we don't want to lose muscle. We want to lose fat, not muscle. And that, and this diet actually targets, you know, targets more the central fat in the body rather than actually the muscle.
Yeah. And presumably, you know, having a diet which has been studied properly and has, you know, the results been peer reviewed and published and are the subject of large trials, you know, that hasn't really happened before in the same way, has it?
Well, I think it has. It's just been very slow implementing it and agreeing. You know, there are so many different programs, and it's not necessarily the best ones that are out there at the moment, and right, they're not really, you know, following the latest evidence.
Right, evidence-based is good, and it seems to me like a bit of a no-brainer because it seems to work. In theory, it could save the NHS millions of pounds, probably billions of pounds. So it seems crazy not to, you know, give it a go.
We have been petitioning Wes Streeting about it. And
shall I give him a call? Do you want me to give him a call, Claire?
Please do. Please
I'll
do.
Try. It might not take my call, but I can always try.
I think he's a busy man.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, if people are listening to this and they want to find out more, or either get involved and thinking, right, actually, I should try something like this because I am too fat or I'm on the verge of getting diabetes and I want to stop that. What are some good resources that they can have a look at?
Well, sign up and have a look at the programs, a fantastic program, the fast800.com. And they provide all the resources that you need, including exercise, including fantastic recipes that are absolutely in line with the best approach. And actually, there's a 30% sale on at the moment as well, if you're kind of, you know, want to go and have a look in and see what a great program it is.
Okay. Is there any information about this kind of thing on the NHS website?
Not for the Fast 800.
No. Okay. All right.
Because it's still seen as a sort of fairly, you know, new novel approach, but it's definitely, you know, going in that direction, the right direction, I'm hoping.
Yeah, good. All right. Very interesting. And based on what you said of people losing about a stone, that's what I need to lose. So maybe I should get involved. But either way, thank you very much to the three of you for chatting. I really enjoyed chatting with you. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Before I introduce my second guest, Dr. Jack Lewis, I want to mention my book, which is great reading for anyone who's at all interested in health matters. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health, and it's available on Amazon and Kindle. Jack Lewis, the next guest, is a neuroscientist, and my first question to him is, well, what exactly is a neuroscientist anyway?
Neuroscientist, so not to be confused with a neurologist who has medical qualifications and helps people with brain complaints. A neuroscientist is essentially someone who studies the biology of the human brain. So during my PhD at University College London, I put people in an MRI brain scanner to work out how the visual parts of the brain and the sound processing parts of the brain share information. And I went on to do that kind of thing in my postdoc out in the Max Planck Institute in Germany. So it's about understanding how the brain does what it does.
OK, so you're more of a scientist than a doctor. You're not a medical doctor and, you're not a brain surgeon.
Correct. I have a PhD, not an MD.
OK, no, I get it. Right. So let's dive into it then. So do people look forward to going back to work after Christmas and do they kind of feel ready for it after a good rest?
Usually not. I think most people can relate to the vibe that it takes a while to wind yourself back up into the kind of high state of frenzy that most people's working life involves, because there's quite a lot of inertia, momentum involved in winding down for the Christmas break. It takes a while for our physiology to kind of catch up with the fact that we don't have to go to work day after day. And so similarly, when you are on the other end of the holiday season and you have to go back into work, it takes a while to ramp yourself back up into the kind of state that you're accustomed to get your work done.
Never used to be though, did it? I mean, we just took Christmas Day off and Boxing Day off and then that was fine. Now it's like everything shuts down for a month.
Wow, a month? No, come on, a week.
All right, a good 2 weeks though.
Yeah, no, it's true. Things have changed. Expectations have changed. But I don't think it's a bad thing that people get to take their foot off the pedal a little bit because, a lot of people work under high stress levels. Cortisol levels are sky high. And you need a little while to get away from the day-to-day pressures in order to bring those cortisol levels back down again to moderate or ideally low levels. And so this research...
Cortisol being something that is a stress hormone.
That's right. So cortisol is a stress hormone. We kind of have a negative association with stress. In moderation, cortisol helps us get stuff done. It mobilizes body and brain to help us deal with the cause of the stress. But there is an expectation that you shouldn't have high cortisol for more than a couple of days. You know, like our bodies work best if it can subside back down to normal levels again. Your body and brain can recover a little bit from being in this high octane zone. And then when the next stressful thing comes along, you can respond to it by increasing cortisol. So it's really important to find ways to really allow yourself to completely unwind and not be perpetually worried about the past or fearing things that may or may not happen in the future.
Okay, so you want to talk a bit how people feel if they're ready for a work after another sort of experience.
Yeah, so like there's lots of different ways that one can unwind. And a bit of research that was commissioned by Cunard involved taking people on the Queen Mary 2 on a 5-day voyage from Southampton to New York City. And they did a bunch of testing, cognitive testing, relaxation measures, and they found some quite remarkable results. And that
what sort of testing did they do? So we got some self-reporting. Is that right?
That's right. There was some self-reporting.
How are you feeling?
So they had galvanic skin response, which measures the degree to which the parasympathetic nervous system is taking over, which is associated with relaxation, compared to sympathetic when you're ready for action and you're kind of poised and ready to go. So the GSR showed that there were a 35 reduction in stress, and then the perception that you were talking about when you ask them how relaxed do you feel, the relaxation levels commensurately went up by 158%, so 2.5 times more relaxed. That was on the sort of relaxation stress angle. When it came to the cognitive testing, it was things like memory recall, how well can you recall a series of words, and that went up by 29% as a result of 5 days on this ocean liner. And then there were three levels of problem solving difficulty. And at the highest level, which was a logical and spatial reasoning test, their capability to solve the problem went up by 125%. So more than double the achievement level after all that time on the liner, on the cruise. And I think we all know that when you go on a holiday, the aim is for your stress levels to come down again. But on most holidays, you don't get this improvement in cognitive performance. And I put that down to the very broad array of stimulating activities they have available. You can do an art class.
On most holidays. So presumably you've done this on all sorts of holidays, on skiing holidays and beach holidays.
This kind of research is completely unprecedented. There's nothing in the academic literature to investigate the benefits of slow travel, traveling on the ocean wave.
Yeah, but you've compared it to different sorts of holidays, presumably doing similar tests.
Well, that's the thing with an unprecedented study. There is nothing to compare it to. So you have to start somewhere. And we started with a cruise.
Right. Because I have to say, people saying they feel a bit better and do better in various tests after a nice holiday kind of makes me think a bit like Fawlty Towers and Basil Fawlty and his specialist subject of state in the bleeding obvious. Because you feel better after a nice holiday.
Oh, I beg to differ, Mike. So while the results to do with relaxation and stress reduction are indeed predictable, as a neuroscientist, I wouldn't have predicted the improvement in cognitive performance, because I don't know what your holidays are like. But typically, after I've been on a beach doing nothing for a number of days, I do not feel cognitively enhanced at all. I am more forgetful. I am dozy. I am not able to do these kind of problem solving tests better. Indeed, I would do them worse. And so that was what I was going to go on to describe, that my account for why we got all of these cognitive improvements is because there are lots and lots of stimulating activities aboard. You can go to a performance of the Royal Shakespeare Company. You can go to a lecture where someone will share fascinating information on various topics. You can do an art class. You can learn about the cosmos in the planetarium. So it's a very different way of traveling, because usually you don't get, you know, you do get the relaxation on holiday, but you don't get the mental stimulation on most holidays. And I think that's what makes this Cunard Queen Mary 2 experience pretty unique.
Right. So did the subjects all do these various different things, or did they just sit on the sun lounger and have a gin and tonic. Did you monitor the stuff they did when they were on the cruise?
No, to my knowledge, that was not monitored, but it all comes out in the wash because out of 40 people, some will engage heavily with the various activities, some will take a much more relaxed approach. And because these results are averaged across all 40, if anything, the fact that some people wouldn't have done, you know, all of the activities available would actually make it less likely that you find a result. So, yeah. It's people do the activities because it's fun and it's engaging. And typically, you know, subjectively, you could see that they would not sat around all day. But yeah, there were no objective measures of that. We've taken that as an assumption.
So are you going to try and publish this in a peer reviewed scientific journal?
Oh, no, this was a pilot study. So right. In science, you generally test the waters, if you'll excuse the pun, with a smaller study. You know, there were statistically significant results and you could publish them, but I think you'd want to, you know, sample a larger proportion of people. And as you alluded to, have a control study that you compare it against. But you need to do a pilot study first so that you can...
What would your control study be? Would it be a family that's at home over Christmas time playing board games and getting on each other's nerves
over the same period of time? That I think would be criticized for being a little bit biased towards showing the biggest possible result, because that wouldn't necessarily be relaxing or cognitively stimulating. Usually the control arm of a study is something which mimics as closely as possible part of the effects you're looking at, but not everything. So maybe it would be 5 days traveling by car to get somewhere compared to 5 days traveling by ocean. To be honest, I'd have to give it some thought, but yeah.
Well, maybe one thing, because this journey happened, what was the date of the journey?
17th of October, I believe. Okay.
It's got nothing to do with Christmas. This kind of thing has nothing to do with Christmas, really, does it?
Well, the effect can happen year round. What it showed was 5 days after a cruise, you can increase relaxation levels and cognitive performance. So unless we, you know, to your point, to be absolutely sure that this happens year round, we'd have to do 4 studies, one in the autumn, one in the winter, one in the spring and one in the summer.
But are you looking for help? Because I'll volunteer.
Well, we're probably not going to do the seasonal study. I think we're safe to presume that when you're enjoying White Star service in the lap of luxury for 5 days aboard the world's only ocean liner, it probably does work year round. I think we can all safely assume that that's the case.
Okay. What about proximity to water? Because obviously you're on a cruise, you're on the ocean. So this is anecdotal. I always feel great when I go by the sea and see the sea. I don't live by the sea. In fact, I live in probably the furthest it's possible to be from the sea and still be in the UK. But when I visit the sea, I feel better. Now, is that normal? Does everyone get that? Or is it just because I'm probably on holiday and in a good mood anyway?
Yeah. Humans have a natural affinity for water, for sure. We love being in it. Like I love surfing. I love crashing around in the ocean wave. We love being on it. You know, boat rides, ship journeys. These are all popular pastimes that people are willing to pay a premium to do. And we love just, you know, glancing out of a window and being able to see it, whether it's through our car windscreen or out of our hotel room. And there's actually a hypothesis, which a lot of the people that I've spoken to probably didn't know this, but you might do. Have you ever heard of the Homo aquaticus hypothesis?
I can't say I have, no.
It's really old. It's from the 80s. And for some reason, even though there's lots of circumstantial evidence pointing towards human physiology, indicating that we evolved on the seaside, not many people know about it. But Our brains are made out of a substance that's really similar to crustaceans. So our brains are bigger than other primates, other mammals. And so where did the raw material come from? If we were eating seafood daily, that could help. The downward pointing nostrils suggests, unlike other mammals, that we were in and out of the water a lot. Our hair follicles are aligned to let water flow off us. We're much more hairless than other mammals. Why did we lose our hair? If we're in and out of the water, then presumably there's survival value to being able to dry off quicker. There's a number of different things that suggest that we evolved alongside the sea, which to me at least would explain why we have this affinity for water, and just being on it or near it makes us feel happier, more relaxed, as you mentioned.
Yeah, no, it certainly does me. All right, so I shall look forward to the next part of the research when you put forty people in a five-star hotel as far away from the sea as possible, and then compare that with the people on the cruise and see if there's a difference.
I like your thinking. That's a really nice way of doing it. It would probably be a pretty pricey study, but yeah, let's hope that we can find the
funding. I also can't help thinking that there's like 101 other variables that the study wouldn't really look at, and in fact probably this little bit of fun you've had on the cruise is probably an awful lot of other variables that are very difficult to kind of tie down.
There are lots of different variables, of course, but we're comparing these 40 people and their state of mind and body on day zero before they went on the voyage to day five after they'd had 5 days of a very pleasurable, relaxing experience. So it definitely has validity. There are ways of expanding the data and exploring further. And only the future knows. Only the future will tell.
Did these 40 people sign up willingly, or were they said, well, you can have dinner on the captain's table if you sign up, or something like that?
It was just if they fancied it, they could sign up if they were going on that particular journey. And then they were vetted according to certain inclusion criteria, because you want to make sure that, that they fit the bill for people who are appropriate for the study. They did it willingly. They weren't incentivized or coerced. It was an extra bit of stimulation for them on their trip.
Glad to hear it. And were there anything else interesting happened on the cruise? Did they lose any passengers? I mean, apparently the statistics for people disappearing during cruises are surprisingly high.
I've never heard of that. And I am 100% sure that everyone who departed came back.
I'm glad to hear it. All right. So look, if people are listening to this and thinking, all right, perhaps I deserve a cruise.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, because they want to be able to be in tip-top shape to go back to work, or maybe they've retired, so they don't have to. I think most of the people retired, so they don't worry about going back to work on the cruise. But if they want to find out a bit more about cruising and what it can do for you,
So you just go to the Cunard website, search for Wellness Waves. There's a really nice report explaining all of the testing and the results. There's a little video of yours truly explaining what the top line results were. And there's also an Instagram page where you get lots of nice pictures reminding you of how lovely it is to be aboard an ocean liner traveling across the ocean.
that part of it does appeal to me, I have to say. All right, so Dr. Lewis, thank you very much indeed for taking a few minutes to chat.
Pleasure, Mike. Have a great day.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show, and they were Dr. Claire Bailey-Mosley along with Sue and Nigel talking about the Fast 800 diet, and Dr. Jack Lewis talking about relaxation and cruising. And of course, a big thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.